This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras, just a track and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and a lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high-fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutrition, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Creekside. I'm kind of skipping the introduction today because today's guest is someone you're familiar with, been on the podcast at least two times I know of. Last time he was down hunting with me, we were on. And it's somebody that I've hunted with. And we just had to add it up because we were not sure. But for 28 years, he's been a friend. And we have hunted. We have swapped out dogs. We have traveled. We have cussed and fussed, complained. And it's amazing how quick time goes by. Like, just sitting here having a conversation, it's like, holy cow, it's been almost 3 decades. Almost 3 decades. But anyway, we back with Bob Melville. And I hate to say it, Bob, but the Catskill Black and Tan sign that's on your kennel is pretty sharp. I don't know how much you had to pay to have that made, but it does look good. Why did you? I ain't even talked about this. Why did you go to Black and Tans when you had all them good Walker dogs that I sent you, and now you went on the Black and Tan train?
Not like putting someone on the spot. Well, as you remember, a couple of years went by, and my business took over, and I got out of dogs. So when I came back, the dogs that I was used to year old type of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They were not here like they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do everything on foot, no roads. So I need something that was going to handle better, maybe, and at least I thought. Make sure there was, when I got there, they were still there, and hopefully something was going to be there in the tree. So that, and that's what I started out as a kid with.
Ah, so okay.
I guess just come full circle. Not, I don't think I really intended, like intentionally did that. It just
ended up.
And I'm pleased. I'm happy. I mean,
there. I mean, you. We were walking out today, and I think we had one of them tied up to a fence, and we was talking about his bone, you know, his structure, his overall conformation. And I mean, they are big. They're big, but they're not huge. Yeah. They're put up pretty decent.
And surprisingly, they're faster than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah. So I could roll with that. And we all know that, like, my first true bear hound was half black and tan. The registered black and tan female was the mom, and the registered walker dog was the dad. So I ain't gonna give you too much grief about it. But yeah, I mean, we have hunted. We've been to Maine. I've been to your place. You've been to my place. Have we been anywhere else?
No, we were gonna go to Canada. Not what happened.
Yeah. Well, like I said, maybe next year we can make that roll up. But we were sitting here having a conversation. It's a shame that you don't have some type of recording device, because some of the best conversations are sitting around trying to figure things out. Like this morning, we was having coffee and we had a great conversation. But we were talking about my ring dog to tell some stories, right? And you know, what is it they say? The deader, the better they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they always say that. So there's probably some truth to that. But for me, he was one of the one. I mean, I've had a couple of really nice hounds over my career. Not many, and we're gonna talk about that in a minute. But not many. But I've had a couple, and he was one of them. He drove me crazy. But he could flat catch a bear. He could trail. He was a super nice tree dog. He was a nice dog. But we were talking about that trip down to our buddies, Anthony's. And do you remember how that took place? Like, I remember us, the only thing that I recollect was us sitting on top of that rock up on top of the mountain, looking over. Yeah. A swamp. And you asking me, like, what are you going to do? And you describe the look. I want you to describe that look so people can understand how
disgusted. Just like destroyed. That's a better word than disgusted. You just stood there with your hands up, basically your elbows on your knees, sitting there just totally destroyed.
Yeah. So we went over, the dog had treed over the mountain a long ways, yeah. And we had to climb the mountain, walk out the AT a good ways, and then down off the mountain into a big swamp. And the dog was sitting in there. I'm trying to think how old he was. Two-year-old. Yeah, two-year-old maybe. And he was sitting in there, and he was treed. Well, yeah. Yeah. So he's sitting in there treed, and I wade out in this swamp. And again, he's slick. It's slick. Like, it's slick. And then we had walked out of the swamp and climbed back to the top, and we were taking a break, and that's when all this conversation happened. And he's like, you know, what are you going to do, Heath? What are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. So we've had this conversation numerous times. And today, when we were reliving this conversation, it actually clicked. I have a... I don't know that I have the answer, but I have a theory. Yeah, that's what we'll roll with. I have a theory. So when Ring was a young dog, that 1 to 2 year, that, you know, puppy to 2 years old, he was coon hunted nonstop. Like, he spent more time in the coon woods than he did in the bear woods. And then once I got him at that 18, 20 months old, I stopped coon hunting him. Like, I didn't coon hunt him anymore. I don't think, I may have taken him a night or two, but it wasn't something that I'd done with him a lot.
He had a career change.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he had a career change. And we were sitting here discussing it, and I've not had an answer for 25 years, however long ago it was. I've not had an answer for this. And today it literally just dawned on me. I'm like he was young. We were in the water. We were in a swamp. And
he also was how many miles in?
It's a long way. So I think he ran whatever it was, switched over. This is my theory now, is I feel like, and we're going to back this up with some evidence. I feel like what he had done is he had ran, he got in that swamp, and we all know that if you coon hunt enough, you're going to make a tree or two that, and again, it was a summertime, so there could have been something in it, but we didn't see anything. As far as I'm concerned, it was slick. It was slick. And that wasn't the first time he'd done that. He'd done that two or three times over that year. And Bob's like, well, you know, we were talking about, how did you fix it? And I'm like, I didn't. I just kept hunting him. So the theory is that when you coon hunt, you're going to miss a coon here and there. Even if a dog is very, very accurate, they're never 100%. I feel like that he switched over to a coon, fell treed in that swamp, which made 100%. It makes sense now. And he never slick treed. You hunted with him years after that. We never had an issue again, ever. Moving forward after that year, we never had another issue with him. And I think he matured out of that. I never coon hunted him again. He learned that, hey, bear's going to be my target, and didn't do it. Yeah. And so let's roll back to Frosty, because we had this conversation too. When Frosty was 6, 8, 10 months old, I used to drive around the back roads at my house, and anything that crossed the road, that dog got dumped on. If it was a possum, if it was a coon, I probably dumped him on bobcat a time or two. I don't know. But in the daytime, I would take him and his mother out, and I would ride the dirt roads, and I'd dump them out on fox squirrels in the edge of the fields. Like, I shot everything out to that dog. Not once did he ever tree a squirrel in the daytime bear hunting. Never. He never treed a possum. And I coon hunted him up till he was probably 2 years old or so, to get that trailing in and to get the tree and the stuff that I needed. And he would tree a coon or two in the early mornings for a year or two, but then he phased out. And then you talk about Belle. We talk about my blue female. I coon hunted her up till she was 18 to 20 months old. That's what I did with her. And I switched her over. And after that initial job change, you know, you got to retrain them, right? After that job change, I never had issues with her treeing coons during the daytime, ever. So during Bob and I's conversation, it was like ding, ding, ding. This is a logical explanation. Now, whether that's what happened or not. Yeah. I mean, I'm really feeling now confident that this is what took place. And we're talking about stuff that happened 25 years ago, still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to figure it out.
Well, the reason you figured it out now is because you had 25 years of how many dogs from that day to that, then to today, how many hours, miles.
Give
you a better perspective on. Back then, we didn't care. As long as something was up a tree, it was happy.
Yeah. Yeah, we just didn't want to trudge 10 miles through the wilderness into a swamp with a slick tree. And that brings us to the conversation this morning. So this morning we're sitting here drinking coffee, and you guys have heard me talk. I did the podcast on my pack evaluation. I've got, and when I say young dogs, I want to be very transparent. 2 year olds are young dogs for me. They had two of the dogs that I'm hunting right now had last season on them. That was it. So basically they got started in August and September and got going and doing. And then December, they got a seat, you know. So we're looking at Virginia. We're looking at 90 days. We talked about that. We can beat that back and forth. So they've got a half of a training season on them, really, or half of a season, because 3 months out of the year is not long enough to train a dog. It's just not. So I got a couple dogs up here. I got one that's 18 months old, and I keep calling him a pup, but he's not a pup. He's a big scoundrel that last year in December, he was 9 months old, and I did not want to. I had the other two-year-olds at the time. So I'm running these 16, 17 months, 15 month olds last year. So I left him behind. I took him out two times. Like, he's been out in the woods two times as far as hunting. So I've got him, and he's 18 months old now. So they're young dogs. That's what they are. They're young dogs, very inexperienced. And I'm scratching my head on what should I do with them? Like, what? They're not meeting my expectations. And again, I'm going to make sure that I give them a fair shake, because that's how I feel like I should operate. But Bob, we were having this conversation, and Bob, what did you tell me?
Well, in my business, in the horseshoeing world, of A Circuit Jumpers, one of the greatest vets of all time, Dr. John Steele, once said to me, "Bob, how many Olympic horses are born? Far and few." So if you were lucky enough, which rang as that category, I feel, was that level of dog. But they're not born that often. I mean, there's hundreds or thousands of dogs, whatever it may be, but
yeah, you just, and that's the problem. You keep thinking, you think too many dogs are going to come to that level. And I just don't think it's reality.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, you know, my expectations are high, and they should be. Like, if you're going to raise dogs and train dogs and breed dogs, you should absolutely strive to have the best. Absolutely. Like, in your breed, in your discipline, whatever it may be, like, that should be the main priority, is to be the best, or to have
breed the best you can. Yeah.
Right. And have the best. And when Bob said that this morning, I'm like, you got a point. And I think I've said this before. Like, I've got a handful of dogs that can catch bear by themselves. And some of them, I'm not even saying they're bear dogs. They can catch bear by themselves. They're consistent. They're solid. They're good, solid dogs. I mean, they're not fast and flashy and fancy. They just kind of, they're in the right place when they should be. And then I have like two exceptional dogs. And then I'm like, I can take any two of the other dogs that I have, two, and be very consistent. But when I bust them up and take one, or one gets away, or just like what we saw today, like, you know, I can poke holes in my dogs like the Titanic, man. Like, I can sink them.
Almost to a fault.
Yeah, like, and maybe it's me being too hard.
Well, I mean, look what you started with, first of all. You started with better dogs than most people ever have. Look at your professional background. That doesn't, I mean, it makes you better at it, but it also makes your expectations maybe a wee bit more than the average person, probably, for sure, but expectation.
And back to the horse theory, you know, you're not, I don't know how, I'll just say, I don't know how to duplicate that litter after litter after litter. Like, I don't know how to do it. Like I said, I've
figured that out. You'd be a,
be a millionaire, I guess.
And you know, you look at the jumper world, the A Circuit horses, there is so much money behind that and so much talented people behind it. And they buy the best horses from the whatever country, Germany, Holland, France, and still you're talking about a couple guys with some hounds And still, there's one in 10,000 that can make that horse that can actually win at the Olympics, either jumpers or dressage or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that number of that level is far and few between. They're freaks, almost.
And do you think that the dog world is that way too? Because,
well, I don't know if it's I mean, it's got to resemble it to a certain point, but it doesn't have the money behind it, or the, you know, those horses have been bred like that for longer, you know, hundreds mm-hmm. of years. So it's,
and you know, I did a podcast with Bart Rogers here a while back, but I replayed it here a couple of weeks, months, maybe a month or two ago. And, you know, he said that you're asking these dogs to, you know, to trail, to bark at a certain interval, to have decent speed. And then once you catch the game, they've got to have the stay or the stick or the grit, whatever terminology you want to use. And then they've got to be able to put enough pressure on the game to keep him, the quarry, treed or bayed and stay with it. He said, you're really asking those dogs to do a tremendous amount. And I think finding that whole, like the whole package is, and I'm people out there have them, you know, they've got dogs that meet their expectations or exceed their expectations. I guess I'm struggling with having the dog, like, to me, they're mediocre. Like, they're average. They're solid. They do okay. But I need that superstar. I need that above average dog for me. And I want my dogs to, we talked about it this morning. Like, I want each one of my dogs, each individual dog, to run as a pack and to play as a pack and to participate in the pack. But if that dog has the opportunity or something happens where he's solo, he or she's solo, I want them to be able to do that by themselves too. And I like,
you just thin that right down to, you know, far and few between. That's why they call them don't they call sports teams?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Is it because our dogs are changing? Is it the way we hunt's changing?
Well, we talked about that too. Like, I feel like our hunting style, mine has definitely changed. I'm not as hardcore. Hit the brush at daylight, don't come out till you can't walk, you know, till you're tired.
Right.
I'm definitely not that way. I'm, you know, as we get older,
we get smarter.
We hunt smarter, not harder. So, and a little bit of laziness. I feel like technology alone has made hunters lazy.
Yeah.
We can roll through that whole thing. I think it's made us lazier for sure.
The lack of time.
Yeah.
You know, if you got what did you say, a 60-day season?
Yeah.
You got temperatures, you got work, family.
Yeah, yeah, I got obligations, and like I said, if you're hunting 60, if you got 60 days to hunt, I mean, it's virtually impossible to hunt 60 days. Like, even if you're off or retired or don't work, whatever it is, like, your dogs are going to get wore down. You're going to have to take a day or two to break. You know, yep. The weather's going to be bad a couple of those days. You know, you're going to have some type of family function, mm-hmm. especially if you got kids. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're going to get wore out after you need a day off, lick your wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I have a bad tendency to poke holes in my dogs. Like, I can tell you the fault to the fault with mine. And I'm not sure that, like I said, I struggle with it, because like I said, my expectations are here, and this is where I need you to be. And as a pack, let's just say I'm hunting six dogs. I got two that meets those expectations and four that are really good, solid dogs, but don't meet those expectations. Do you send them packing?
I don't know. That's everybody. That's up to you. Everybody has. Well, like I said, they're not born every day.
Well, and another part of that too is like, I think a part of my holdup is I know how hard it is to replace the average dogs that I have, right?
Yep.
I know how hard it is to replace them. Like, again, you may go through 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 more dogs to get
one,
that.
You sell one of them or give it away. It may take you 10 dogs to get what you had.
Mm-hmm.
Starting over with puppies and good bred dogs. I'm not talking about Sooners. I don't know. I guess it's all in a breeding program. It almost have to do like two different lines at the same time. One over here is a little different than the one over there. And then you kind of
mix and match.
Mix them in, you know, weaknesses to strengths.
The breeding part is so hard. Like,
it's, you have to have a lot of dogs.
Yes, which I'm trying to cut really, down to.
Really perfect that.
Yeah, that's not easy.
Especially if you're working for a living.
Yeah. And I enjoy, like, I enjoy raising pups so much. I enjoy the process, like taking them from puppy and then getting them to doing my scent imprinting with them and then getting them to trail the scent and flipping it over from the bear hide to the remote control car. But that doesn't mean, like I said, it, even though you put all this time and work into them, and I enjoy it, it doesn't mean they're going to turn out to be anything. Like, we had that conversation, like two of the Sooners I got down here, like I did all that with them and they excelled at it. They excelled to my expectations at their age, at that 4, 5 months old. I could have done it to 6 with them. I don't remember, but they really excelled at some of that stuff. And now it's like, you're sitting there scratching your head and like, what happened? Like what went on here? What did I miss? How did I, you know, did I do something wrong in my training regimen? Is it genetics? Like, they show you the stuff up front. They're showing you the stuff at a young age.
But they just leveled out?
I don't know. And I don't have the answer to that.
I mean, back in the old days when they had the Coonhound world, there was a lot of these young, nice dogs that were just superstars out of the box. And then by the time they were 3 or 4 years old, they weren't no better than the meat and potato dog.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one thing I believe in is letting puppies be puppies. Like, just like Zeke that I'm fooling with right now. I had somebody messaged me on Facebook Messenger and was asking me about the process. I'm only doing that once, maybe twice a week with him. I'm not burning him up every day. Like, I'm not every day. Now, every day I'm doing something with him, but I'm not laying tracks for him every day. Like, I maybe work on, like right now we're working on getting up on heights because I want him jumping in the tailgate. So I've got a little step stool, which I've got with me.
I've seen it.
Yeah. So I put the food. So I'm working on heights right now, and he's not scared of them. Like, if he can get up on top of the table on the deck, like, he'll get up on top of the table. But I'm doing something with him every day. It's just not the same thing. And I don't want to, he's a puppy. Like, I let him run loose. I put him up at night. Like, I don't force anything. If he doesn't do it, then I back up, I evaluate what I'm doing and what he's doing and where he's at, and I shift. And maybe nothing. I may move to nothing. I may make it easier, or I may change the challenge that I'm asking him for. But I don't do stuff with him. I don't do the tracks every day.
I know in the retriever world, when dogs would get to be like, go from the puppy to the adolescent, you know, young dog stuff, a lot of times they would get up, they would just look terrible. And I would never, while I wasn't, you know, I was new, you know, I wasn't a dog trainer at them day. And sometimes I just would leave them, just put them up and leave them be for a week and just maybe let them run around the yard, but not do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be amazing how much they would remember what you thought they didn't know. And they'd go back at it again. I mean, and I've done it over several times with different dogs over the years. So I don't know. Maybe they just, I think you could probably overdo that mental stuff
mm-hmm.
when they're too young.
Yeah.
You know, even though it may not seem that tough.
Yeah, they're puppies. They're literally in human words, they're an infant.
Yeah.
They're literally an infant. So yeah, I try to be mindful of that. And another thing we talked about today too is patience. We can't say it enough. Things don't get me sideways like it used to.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
Well, it's not so important either too. Like it's more of the overall outcome of the dog than it used to be. We got to get something in the tree today.
Yeah.
And we lost that, so to speak, in a good sense. You know, what was often thought about, like pound puppies, if you just took them to a big old farmyard where there was chickens and ducks and geese and pigs and cows, and you just let them, if you had the opportunity, just let them puppies run through all them different odors.
Mm-hmm.
And even don't ask them to do nothing. Just go out there and figure, like, I always, because, you know, as a kid, I remember them dairy farm dogs were mm-hmm. always far ahead than the dogs mm-hmm. were raising on chains and kennels.
Oh, I believe that 100%.
You know.
Yeah, just like us picking, like for in the police world, I've really, when I go to test a dog or to pick a dog now, I don't want a kennel dog. I want one that somebody's brought in as a puppy and fostered, and they do that a lot overseas. Like, you know, Pino, my dog, like he was raised on a sheep farm with Great Pyrenees.
Oh yeah,
and sheep and chickens. And he's about as animal friendly as you can get. And he's calmer. I believe he's calmer because of that. So, yeah, I like.
I think they decipher things better, too, because all that different scent doesn't, you know, like cook them mentally.
Yeah.
They're so used to going through all this
stuff. And they figured that on their own time.
Right.
We're not forcing them to do it. Yeah. The dog wants to go out in the field today and check out the cow. He does it on his own time. You know, he goes to the driveway today and looks over there. He's like, yeah, that's a big animal. And then tomorrow he's back in the driveway. And then, you know, 3 days from now, he's like, oh, I'm going to go through the fence and get a little closer. And nobody's pressuring him to do it. He just does it on his own.
Yeah.
And you talk about patience, you know, so today, this evening, we won't go through the whole fupa, but I've got one dog that I need to get out from underneath my feet. And even though we were not successful, the dog wasn't underneath my feet. So I was successful. How did you term that? You said something about it.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, even though we didn't accomplish what we wanted to accomplish, we accomplished something.
Like you may think it's a failure, but it's actually not. It's actually a lesson learned.
Yeah.
You know, he did bark, did chase,
mm-hmm.
even though it may not have been up to your expectations. But
right. But he wasn't under my feet.
Nope. He even got himself a little lost.
Yeah, he did. So, like, again, and you, when you told me that, when you said that, you're like, well, it wasn't a whole roint. Like, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. I need him to step out.
And tomorrow's another day and another day. And then hopefully, like Abby, one day, boom.
I'm hoping because I don't know. I think I need to make a checklist. Like, but the thing is, here's the problem with a checklist.
That's a human checklist.
That's a time. That's right. It can't be on a timeline because the dog is on his own time.
That's just going to frustrate you more.
It's just like we talk about dope dealers when we're doing our undercover buys. Like, you on your time or dope time? Because dope time shows up when they want, where they want, anytime they want. It may be at 2 o'clock in the evening. It may be at 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't tell you how many times I've sat on stuff for hours and hours and hours waiting on stuff to go down that never went down. So, I mean, same thing, you know, maybe I need to change that. Maybe I need to say my dogs are on dope time. They just do it when they want to. Yeah. They will do it when they want to.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's every,
And next dog you get is going to be totally different.
Oh, it's guaranteed. That is guaranteed that it will be.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's caused me to have more patience, is seeing so many dogs in my working world and how all dogs do differently at different times. And just because you don't have that rock star, let's put it into hound terms, you don't have that puppy at 6 months old blowing the top out of the tree. Like, I've had some police dogs that are phenomenal, but they mature differently. They do it on, you know, I can coax and I can encourage and make things come along a little faster, but it's on them. It's on them. And just because that dog didn't do it at 6 months old, don't mean he's not going to do it at 12 or 14 or 16. Just like my 18-month-old that I've got, like he's not had the opportunity. Like he's not had it. He got out two times last year in December. He spends a whole lot of time out in the yard running around and hanging around with us and doing what else. But he's seen his first bear. Yes, day before yesterday.
Yeah, 2 days ago.
2 days ago. And wait, he did bark. Yeah, he soon as he seen it,
and he went out, we let it go. Remember, when he come down, he went.
Mm-hmm.
He went. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, he seen it, and he started barking. And then today, he wasn't even at the tree when he treed. He come in behind them, but then he started treeing.
Yeah, you can see that old bear sitting up.
Yeah, so that's progression. And again, I know he's 18 months old, and people say he ought to be catching his own bear. He can't catch his own bear when I've had him in the woods two times. He's been in the woods four times in his life.
Realistic. I mean, sure, you can go out there and...
Yeah, four times in his life he's been in the woods. So put a good hard training season on him. And if he keeps, and I want to see progression. Like, if he kind of stalemates, that's going to determine his future with me. But if he keeps progressing, like if he, you know, if he makes race, he starts making races, and he, you know, he's at the tree when I get there, like that's the first steps I want to see. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. Well, you figure it out, let me know.
Yeah, if I had it figured out, I wouldn't be in the shape I'm in now.
It seems like the more you learn, the more you realize there's so much big holes. I don't know.
There's definitely no animal, horse, dog, chick, whatever you raise and whatever you train, and that's perfect.
Yeah, they all got their own.
Yeah, there's none. It is literally impossible to get 100% what your definition of that 100% may be not what my 100% is. We know that's a common theme.
Well, especially when you, like you said, dead dogs are always better than the ones you have now. Mm-hmm. But I do believe those dogs we were spoken of earlier would give the dogs, at least today, a run for their money for sure.
Man, I mean,
I think they were tougher too. Maybe because you worked them harder, longer. Maybe not smarter, but harder. I mean, I tell you what, that Frosty and Bell and them, I mean, even that Sam dog, good Lord, you couldn't catch him unless he was treed.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just go and go and no quit, which I don't know as if we want that much.
Not at our age, but but I, you know, that is one of the things that I really harp on is if you get after something, I need you to catch it, stay with it, tree it, or stay till I can catch you off of it.
Right.
And I mean, I know in the summertime, the heat makes things different. I know that's a problem. But yeah, I mean, and he was that dog. Like, he literally, dude, you had to run him down. And
even Frosty going up banging with that bear. I thought it was getting dark even. And we was on that thing all day.
Yeah. Yeah. They, I don't know. It's hard to compare them because that was 20 years ago. It's hard to compare those dogs.
Yeah, you know, I still think they had, well, they had a lot of heart. Let's put, anyways.
They did. And, you know, like, but we didn't have Garmins. We didn't have GPSs. We weren't shocking and toning them for everything.
Right.
Like,
because we weren't outthinking ourselves like we do today. Because we didn't know enough to outthink ourselves.
Well, that's true. Like, yeah, sometimes not knowing is the best. But I mean, I never shocked. I didn't even have a shocking collar to use. Like, I didn't have it. I had to borrow one off Fielder to break Bill and Clyde off deer. Like, I had to borrow one from him because I didn't have one.
And you couldn't borrow one up in this country because if you found somebody had them, they used your retriever guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't going to let you have it going to woods.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. But, yeah, I mean, we didn't, just like this evening, I stopped the one dog. And here was an internal battle with me. Like, this is one of the dogs that I need him to get out by himself and catch. And it was getting hot. He'd already had a hard run. It was a long run. He was out there by himself. And he kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm like, I'm going to have to stop him or we're going to be out here for a long time. I don't know which. And I finally hit the tone one time and he stopped in his tracks. And he come right. He was back to us in what 5 minutes.
I'm always afraid of that heat stroking.
Yeah, and I battled that internally with me. Like, I need him doing what he's doing, and I'm getting ready to ask him to stop when I need to build that confidence. Like I need him to do that.
Yeah.
So, and I made the decision to stop.
Yeah, but if you just don't do, you know, if it's not a habit.
Yeah. And I mean, you see how well he is. Like, he was 550 yards, and I hollered. And as soon as he heard me, I told you, I said, he's coming. And he climbed a mountain and come right to us. Like, he's easy to be around.
Very biddable, yeah.
Yeah, he's very easy to be around. And he, like I said,
that makes, like, in my country by myself,
yeah,
you got to have dogs like that. You can't be getting, even though I don't really quite have that all, but. Up in them ledges and stuff, you need something that's going to mind you a little bit,
mm-hmm.
work with you.
I think that's the one thing I'm halfway decent at is putting some obedience on the dog. I don't know about the other part. I'm all over the place. Like, one dog's in this direction, one dog's doing this, one dog's doing that, and you're trying to think, okay, I need you two doing this together here.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, we turned four dogs loose this evening and
two different directions.
Three different directions. Well, one come back and two.
Two went down and two went out.
Yeah, two and two, yeah. I'm like, how do you have, like, okay, guys, I need you.
Yeah, but there's some other reasons why that.
Yes, happened. Yeah, we do. We know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, Bob. Like I said, 28 years, I have enjoyed.
Absolutely.
Our trips, our conversations, our hunts. And we have some very memorable hunts. Like,
yes, sir.
I mean, you're bringing back stuff that, like, that one night we was running upside the road, beating the guardrail, trying to get the bear to stay on that side of the road so he could catch Frosty.
Yeah.
And every time I would go in to grab him by the tail, that bear would just turn and woof.
Woof.
Yeah, and I was like, I mean, we stayed
after. He was a big bear, too.
Yeah, that was a big bear.
That's one of them Pennsylvanians come over into Jersey bears.
He's a big one, yeah. Yeah, he was a big one. Yeah. Right. And we've had good races.
Come into New York.
We've had good races at the house. We've had good races up here.
I remember that time up? I think it was behind your dad. Was it behind your dad's? Was like a amphitheater.
Yeah.
And it was just dogs. Somebody else's dogs join in. It was just wah wah.
Yeah.
You hear that from the New York line.
Yeah, they were playing a song, weren't they? It's kind of I like to hear. That's what Johnny said this morning, or who was it yesterday? Said, "Well, I didn't hear you, Ray." He's like, "I hear them dogs." I was like, wait till we get these walker dogs in there. You'll hear that mountain echo.
Difference today and yesterday than compared to them just running with two or three dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fact. Well, anyway, those conversations are good. And I mean, like I said, we're still trying to talk. We're talking about things happened 20 years ago. Some of it really reliving and reminiscing. And some of it we're still trying to figure out.
And we'll be having the same conversations to some degree. And as long as we know one another.
As long as we're hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as we're hunting. So, well, Bob, I appreciate you having me up.
Yeah,
and
my pleasure.
It doesn't
happen enough.
No. We'll get you down in December and Maybe we can get. Oh, we got to talk about Jenna and her four wheel drive
slippers. What do they call them?
I don't know what she's
Crocs.
No, they ain't Crocs.
They're not Crocs. Hey.
Anyway, so his niece has been going with us, and she'd been wearing literally they're like slippers. They're like bedroom slippers, and she's hunted 3 days with us. And she's wearing them slippers every day and going through the mountains, through the rocks. I mean, it's crazy.
We have a trap. Me and her uncle have a coyote trap line all winter.
Uh-huh.
And she wears them all winter in the snow. I took her deer hunting. I don't know if she wore them deer hunting when she killed her deer, but she
had them on. I showed you in the picture.
Turkey hunts with them on. And she never complained.
They got, they're insulated, aren't they?
I don't think so. I think
they're not
a little bit of fuzz in them or something.
Holy cow. I said, that's like that guy that run from me at day. I was chasing him with Pino. He had them Crocs on. They were four wheel drive Crocs because he about got away. Well, we've had a good time. So
cool.
We'll keep you up to date on what's going on. That's going to be a wrap for this week's episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us, whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek just listening along. Thank you for walking this trail with us. And we got to say thank you to W Supply for hosting the podcast and supporting everything we do. Be sure to check them out and go to wsupply.com for all your hound hunting needs. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, those leads tight, boots muddy, and we'll see you at the tree.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged, beeping green, boots in the bed and the rifles clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum, we're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near, nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale, through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV, North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard-run hound. New York forest, Maine's deep snow, Vermont valley's where the black bears go. Truck keeps rolling, wheels don't care, we're chasing daylight, chasing bears. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun set red in Tennessee, rise through the fog. Chasing bear. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care, we're built for the road. And
chasing bear. So load the dogs and slam the gate. There's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there, chasing daylight, chasing them bears.